Welcome to the Motorcycle Vagabond Show. Today we've got Donnie, and she's here to talk about her not really motorcycle magazine, more like a motorsports magazine. Is that correct?
Yeah, I'd go with automotive motorsports.
Yeah. So what's it called?
It is called Throttle Gals Magazine. Basically it encompasses anything with a throttle. So cars, trucks, planes, mopeds. If you build it, race it, drive it, love it, we cover it. But it has to be hers. That's the caveat to that magazine.
So women and their machines, pretty much.
Actually, that was one of the working titles that my partner and I had on it, was Women and Machines, or Women and Her Machines. We called it WOM. We decided that probably wasn't a good name for it.
It's so hard to come up with a cool name that has a cool acronym, too.
Yeah, or one that, you know, doesn't have some sort of other meaning. It's going to get you in trouble in cyberspace somewhere. Got us in trouble, so.
Oh. Well, at this point, I think anything can get you in trouble if you're lucky enough.
Well, Throttle Gals is gals, not girls, because Throttle Girls at the time was a porn site. So we didn't find that out until we were just about ready to launch. So that was special.
Why am I not surprised that's a porn site? So how long have you been doing this?
Trish and I launched this in 2010 was our first issue. So we pre-launched in 2009.
Wow, so you're looking at like 13, 14 years?
Yeah, we're getting old. We have a teenager.
Hey, your magazine will be able to vote soon.
I'm telling you.
So what got you into doing the magazine?
So there is a motorcycle magazine. Real quick history. There's a motorcycle magazine called The Horse that was originally Iron Horse, and then Iron Horse went down and The Horse came up, and The Horse magazine employed me as the managing editor for a few years. And so I was already in the motorcycle publishing industry. My partner, Trish Horseman, worked at the time with Baker Drivetrain, which is a motorcycle parts company specializing in drivetrain components like overdrive transmissions and such. And she was my person of contact for art and ad stuff. And I was the person that was in charge of putting the magazine together. And so her and I worked together pretty tightly on a lot of stuff in conjunction with her part of the magazine, which was really the advertising for Baker. And, so my background really was with The Horse. And being really the only female involved in any part of the editorial side of the magazine, it was soul-sucking. Because, we had a couple of rad bikes. Athena Ransom built a couple of really nice bikes that we published, and they're being shown by these, TNA models that, were just nasty looking, and we wouldn't show Athena because she wasn't, quote, pretty enough. And it just, I hated everything about it. So, yeah, that's my background.
So I started a Facebook community called Minimalist Motorcycle Vagabonds, 5.5 years ago, because the other motorcycle camping groups were either all about what air conditioner I should bring on my motorcycle trailer, or very snobby about if you're riding anything besides like a BMW. And I was like, no, I'm going to not do that and make my own community. So I feel, that's a really great driving force, has been for me at least, to run what I do.
Yeah, it's tough. It's tough when you find yourself in a situation where you know there's other people out there that, that would get it. And you're stuck, though, in, a group of people that don't, right? So the guys that I was working with, they didn't have any idea why I was so irritated that we didn't put in pictures of Athena or a friend of mine is a dude, but his wife was into pictures of him building the bike, and they still wanted to reshoot with somebody, quote-unquote, prettier. And I was involved in the photo shoots with the other women, and they were airheads, and they were stupid, putting their stupid stiletto heels, right on the beautiful tanks of these bikes and stuff. And I was just like, I can't handle this anymore. And So Trish and I were talking one day because she was irritated with something in her work world. And I said, you know, why don't we just take over the world? She says, okay, I'm game. What are we taking over? And I pitched this idea to her about this magazine that would encompass, you know, women builders of basically at the time, I was really focused actually on motorcycles with a car, like a car side reach. And, you know, it's kind of taken on its own life where it changes every issue is completely different. But, you know, it was just all about, you know, celebrating the women that were doing the stuff that weren't celebrated by the traditional magazines because, you know, they weren't a size 2 with fake boobs and dyed hair and other whatever nonsense the magazines wanted for their male audience. So, like I said, I have a little bit of a chip on my shoulder about that.
You know what? I have a chip on my shoulder about this as well that I have to constantly keep an eye on because of those women who I don't blame them for taking a job that pays them, you know, being a model, but because of the image of models with motorcycles, no one takes me as a serious motorcycle rider. Like I actually ride my own. I actually travel. I'm actually my own mechanic. But because everyone assumes that a woman with a motorcycle taking pictures is just doing it for, you know, likes or being a model, you know, they're not the legit thing. I get treated in such a way that it's just frustrating some days.
You know, it's funny that you say that. Trish wrote an article, an editorial, this issue, where it specifically talks about the perception of what happens when models do things. Because this specific instance is somebody posing a model with a soldering iron and she's holding the metal part. And it's like, you know, in general, women aren't taken seriously because models have created this, I guess, reality for people that, you know, because this is what they see, women are stupid, right? So, you know, women are objectified and made to look really dumb in a lot of the images. And so we have to, like, fight to be taken, like, seriously at all, right? So it's something that really drives me crazy. I feel like as a model you should be doing your research on what you're doing so that you don't look stupid, I guess, and make the rest of us look dumb.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
It does. It's frustrating some days, and I mean it took me a few years to get a reputation where people actually respect what I do. And realize I'm not just trying to use my ass and tits to get attention. I truly love motorcycles. Like, I'm truly here to, like, inspire people to travel, not look at my tits. If I wanted someone to look at my tits, I could definitely find that anywhere.
Yeah, it's not hard to do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So what do you focus on with your magazine? Do you do a lot of articles? Do you do your own writing, or do you have people that do that for you?
It's a mixed bag. So this current issue, I wrote most of it because it was pretty heavily focused on a project that I was involved in, which is a Bronco build, which doesn't make any sense to really, you know, explain more with the group of people that are listening on this. But so this issue is really heavy on that. But depending on the stuff that comes to us, most of our stories come from, you know, people in the wind, so to speak. They're like, hey, you know, are you interested in the story? And, you know, usually we are because we like having like a mixed bag, and, you know, we'll get a story from somebody who, you know, did a 4,000 mile journey, or drag raced or hit, you know, a land speed record or whatever that story is. And most of those stories come from the horse's mouth, so to speak, not, you know, it's not necessarily an interview and then I transpose it and write it out. And so the story is much more authentic, I think, that way. But, you know, it's seriously, every issue is so different. They all feature some sort of tech component. They all feature, we have a tongue-in-cheek throttle guy at the end of every issue that's kind of a like a joke towards the men's magazines at the pinup model at the end. And it's just a goofy picture of a male friend of ours or something that is in there. But we have a little bit of fun with it. But other than that, the magazines are, they're all over the place. The commonality is that it's her stuff, but the information changes based on the stories that come in.
That's really awesome. Have you, so I'm going to ask you a question that I've dealt with myself. Have you ever had burnout running the magazine?
I haven't come out with one since last March. And the last issue is shipping out, it's actually shipping out tomorrow because that's when my envelopes are going to come in. Because doing, you know, doing this in-house, you get to the point where it's like you, at least I have kind of been overwhelmed and I suffer from a little bit of like self-defeat because it's not where I wanted it to be. And so then it like kind of turns into a cycle of, I don't have any accountability because I own the magazine and, yeah, it becomes like a horrible catch 22 where, I didn't come out with one for several months because I didn't have anything I wanted to write about and I kind of hated everything about it. So I just ended up with a resurgence. So I'm catching up on my, my frequency right now.
You know, having personal standards is not a bad thing. Like I actually really appreciate it. And now you've now got a reader from me that you put that much of yourself into your product. That means so much to making a quality product.
Yeah, but it's exhausting, you know, and it's like, you know, and at the same time, I don't know, I presume you have a life outside of Z-Traveler, the business end of it. And if you have a life outside of what you do for a living, you know, it gets really complicated sometimes. It's like, okay, what do I put first? You know, my family or you know, my passion and my dream, right?
So right.
Sometimes you get personal burnout and it carries over to, you know, what you have going on in your quote unquote professional life because it's all connected when you're self-employed.
I've had a lot of conversations with my partner about how I need to have work personal life boundaries because he's like, you've been working for like 24 hours every day for the last 3 weeks and we don't have time together. You keep getting on your phone. And I'm like, oh my God, I'm so sorry. So
yeah.
I make sure, you know, drawing these lines, I live on the road. So someone submitted your name to me for my podcast. And so this is our
Dana Schaefer.
Yeah. So this is actually our first time talking. And so I guess you don't know about me. I've been living on the road for 6 years. I'm an expert motorcycle vagabond. I teach people how to do this. I'm writing a book about it. It's mostly about humor. I go to presentations. I talk about it. I love to ride in camp. I'm very much on the road to spend time with myself and with my partner that I have one. We've been dating 2.5 years. So I have to keep that separate from the fact that I run Bunk a Biker and MMV and this podcast and my personal persona. Like, road time is me, and then I'll take the time off the road to run my own rallies and to go to other people's events, but I want to keep them separate. And then when I'm off the road, I got to make sure I still maintain my own personal identity outside of doing these things.
Yeah, you sound like a big story that we need to cover. I'm not even sure how I haven't heard of this because my head's probably been so far, you know, into burnout world lately that, that's kind of funny. I'm sure I've heard of the stuff you're doing. Cause I've been following Bunk a Biker for a couple of years, but I had no idea that you were behind it. So that's really funny.
Yeah. MMV is where I got my start as being an admin on Facebook, being a community leader. And then I took over Bunk a Biker 3 years ago. A guy from Norway originally started it and then it went defunct. He had a career and health problems and didn't have time for it. So I took it over after I'd gotten ran over by a car and had to have my MCL replaced. I had 6 weeks on no motorcycles. I was like, yeah, I'm either going to start my own or I'm going to take this one over if he lets me. So he let me take it over and whew, it's been quite the beast since then.
Yeah, I think the whole Bunk a Biker thing is really, really cool because, you know, the way that you guys have it set up, it really seems like you get high quality and high caliber people on both ends. And I love the fact, like, I love the stories I've read, you know, people talking about, you know, how much they love the last house they were allowed to camp at. And I remember one guy was saying that he was so, you know, so thrilled that he went there to, you know, throw a sleeping bag on the, you know, in the backyard somewhere. And someone was like, would you like some coffee? And he's like, that'd be great. I'd be so thrilled to have coffee. I was just looking for a place to put my sleeping bag. And he ended up getting a shower and, you know, like, I guess they opened up their super hospitable to him and he wasn't expecting that. I thought that was really cool that he was so nice about it. You know what I mean? Like, I thought it was a great, I guess, lead in to what I remember, like, learning about, because that's really what took me into starting reading about it. So I think it's awesome.
That's why I run it. Right there is why I run it, is getting to see people have those experiences, because as a famous traveler myself, I've always had the offers since my name was known from people inviting me to their homes. And I was like, you know, it's kind of bullshit that only people who are famous can do this. And I mean, I've met quite a few of the famous writers that I'm not friends with, to say the least. So I was like, why can't the normal, you know, average day writer who gets their 2 weeks or a month off every year get the chance to have this experience? And that's what drives me to continue doing this, is getting to see those stories.
Yeah, I met a, you called it, I'm going to try to get the terminology right, a vagabond writer, yes?
Yeah,
that's
what I call them.
So my husband and I took our kids up to the Upper Peninsula of Michigan for a trip on the way to drop my oldest off at college, and he's going to college way, way up north. He's up at Michigan Tech, which is, it's funny, I live in Michigan too, and he's almost, including bathroom breaks, it's 10 hours. To get up there. You can make it an 8 if you don't stop for anything, but it's still a long way away and you're still in the same state. And, but we camped out at this place right on the Lake Superior shoreline and, down by Munising. And, there was a guy there and it was just him, his motorcycle and his sleeping bag. And my youngest child, he's 8 now, he was 7 at the time. He's like, Mom, where's this tent? Cause we love camping. And we do backpacking, so I understand the minimalistic side of it. And I was like, what do you mean, where's his tent? He goes, well, he's just laying on his sleeping bag next to his motorcycle. I'm like, well, that's probably because that's all he took with him. Like, he's just, you know, chilling out in the sleeping bag next to his little fire. And he's like, well, doesn't he need a tent? I'm like, why do you need a tent? You don't need a tent. And it was a really cool conversation starter where I explained to him, because my dad travels that way, and it was like, yeah, you just need the clothes on your back. And, you know, maybe a change of clothes, and, you know, if you want, then, you know, your sleeping bag. So I've known people that have done it without even a sleeping bag if they're warm enough. And it's just, I think it's really freeing, you know, to be able to travel that way, because, you know, you get to leave all the bullshit behind. No baggage, right?
No baggage because you don't got room for it.
Right, and the guy was super, super nice and was explaining his trip to my little guy, and it was very cool.
That's
like, where
awesome.
Are you going? Not really sure where I'm going yet. Just gonna go, and wherever I feel like going, I'll go, and wherever I feel like stopping, I'll stop, and it'll be a new experience. And I'm like, that's awesome.
I'm glad you guys met a cool one. There's some out there that may not have gone so well from what I've heard.
Really?
Just like every other industry in the world, once you start getting popularity and fame into it, it's a rat race.
Well, I guess there's assholes everywhere, so why shouldn't there be assholes over there, right?
Exactly.
Yeah, we have our share of those. With Throttle Gals, as you know, we focus on women, and there's a couple of semi-famous local men in our area, and, you know, they keep trying to get, well, the specific one I'm thinking of, he keeps trying to get a story in our magazine, and I'm like, I don't know how to explain this to you, but you're not a chick. You're not even trying to be a chick. You're not even trying to go transgender. You're just a dude that, like you're already, like, locally famous. Why do you care? And he's so narcissistic that he's been really dickish about, like, what we do, because we won't feature him. I just think it's funny. So then he gets this girlfriend, and he tries to get us to feature her, and I'm like, that's not legit. Like, I'm pregnant with your daughter, and she's legit, and she says that your girlfriend's not. So, yeah, we're not doing that. Sorry.
Jeez. Yeah.
There's always a hater, right?
There is. Like, I'm usually co-ed myself. I understand why there are men who want men-only places and women who want women-only places. I prefer to hang out in places that invite both, but if someone wants their place where they just want one or the other, like, leave them alone. Let them have their space. You don't need to be everywhere.
Right.
Does that make sense?
And, Sure. And like to that thing, like the magazine features women because you really don't have anyone else that does. We have a thing called the Throttle Gals Revolution, and the first three letters are all in caps. So it's REV. So it's basically cars and motorcycles. And that show is, it's co-ed. We focus and feature the women vehicles that are in the spotlight. So those are the ones that would get chosen for any award or anything like that. But everybody's welcome. So we're really just about empowering women to realize that they can do the same things and that, you know, we want them to, I guess, experience what it's like to be a majority, because it's really unusual in this industry. Does that make sense?
Yeah, you're very lucky to be 20% when it comes to motorcycles, to have 20% of your population to be women.
We have, I mean, when it comes to motorcycles, it was all women. Our last show, we didn't have a single man on a motorcycle. But we have We have a lot of women riders out here in Metro Detroit. Like, there's several clubs. I'm sure if we, like, would have promoted it to the men, that probably would have changed things, but we really promoted it to the women club. All of our attendees on bikes were women. It was awesome, man. There's some really fun stuff that came out of woodwork for that.
It sounds really awesome. I've been to a few women's events, and it's been mostly women. I went to the Southwest Quest in Colorado, ran by Bridie for In Cahoots. That was a pretty good event. And then WEMA, Michelle Lampier, took over the Women's International Motorcycle Association for the U.S. But they're co-ed, so we did have some women who showed up, but it was still mostly women, and it was super cool to see that happen.
And I love it when men take part in stuff like that, because I love the support, right? Because it's like, we're not like a she, man, he haters club. I think I just reversed that whole thing, right? Yeah, he, man, she, woman, whatever. You know, we don't hate men by any means. And then if anything, we would like more of them to celebrate us. But there's so many out there that are very much against what we're doing, because, you know, there's still a lot of the old, like the old white man, I guess, I don't want to say entitlement because that's not quite the right word. But just
machoism?
Like the whole thing. Yeah, where it's like we're not equals. We can't do the same thing that they do just because. And, you know, I got shut down pretty hard by one of the guys and said, you know, this is our sandbox. Don't you stay the hell out of it. And I'm like, because I like playing in the sand too. You know, like, why can't we do this? It doesn't affect them. So when you have somebody that is part of what you're doing, like if they ride with you and stuff, like, I find that wonderful. Like, I love the men that'll do stuff with us.
Like, yeah, that's
our supporters.
That's the WEMA goal, is that it's about women, but they allow everyone to come because other women and men can support women doing this thing. It's just, you know, let's promote women on motorcycles, but invite everyone to do the same thing.
Exactly.
Have you ever heard
about women, but everyone's welcome.
Right. Have you ever heard about the Women's Motorcycle Show? Ran by Alicia?
No.
So I went to that one in 2020, and it was in L.A. So she puts together a motorcycle show where the only bikes that can be submitted were modified by women. So it's women builders and whatever. So I submitted my ratty travel bike just for funsies. And she made me feel so welcome, and I really love that show. She has a really great community that you may find interest in covering one day.
What did you say her name was?
Her name's Alicia. Her name's Moto Lady. Yeah, and it's a women's motorcycle show. So that was a really nice one, too. I've had the unfortunate, like, I've showed up to some women's gatherings that were very much centric on bashing men and almost becoming the thing they hate. You know, they're like smacking people's asses and being just a little raunchy, for my opinion. Like, I'm here to talk about motorcycles and hang out. I'm not trying to put on an act or a show or anything like that. Like, I have a partner I love. I don't have anything against men. Like, I'm just here for motorcycles, and sometimes it's not the environment I want to be a part of, even as a woman.
No, and it's funny. It's kind of like, you know, when you, like, hate one of your parents, and yet you find yourself becoming just like them. You don't want to do that.
Man. One of my partner's god kids, she's turning into her mom that she hates, and I'm over here like, oh, can you not see it happening? Okay, I'm going to go ride motorcycles now.
Sometimes you need someone that you love and trust to hold that mirror up and be like, hey, you know how you don't like it when men treat you like this? Why are we treating each other like this? And
yeah.
Society's rough on us enough. It's like we really need to be, you know, so Throttle Girls tries to be inclusive. And I remember, like, we were involved with an event with another lady, and she, you know, she was subdividing our already incredibly small group, because women in motoring at any level is small, right? And then when you start segregating out people that like this kind of music, people that are this age group, people that are this, you know, ethnicity, et cetera, and you start taking percentages out of percentages, and you have nobody left. And it's like, wait a minute, we started all this because we already felt marginalized. Why are we marginalizing further? Right?
And you start getting into people who ride this kind of bike and that kind of bike, and
right, like a Harley owners only, because, you know, we don't have enough problems. We're going to make it women that only ride Harleys. That would be exactly the type of thing that I would be completely against, because it's not about the type of bike. Yes, I have a Harley, but I don't care if you have one or not. And my Harley, most Harley riders get irritated with, because it's an AMF Harley. So whatever. I don't care. I like my bike.
What is your bike?
It's a 72 or 74 Ironhead. I'm reading Trish's, Trish has a 72 Ironhead, and I was reading her thing while we were talking. So, but I have a 74 and she has a 72.
That's awesome. Do you do your own wrenching?
I do. Unfortunately, you know, with everything else, I don't do enough of it, but I have to rebuild the clutch in mine and get it ready for the next season, so that I can actually go out and, you know, beat it up some more. But Ironhead, you know the conversation that, you know, an Ironhead has to be worked on all the time, and it does. It has to be worked on quite a bit. That's okay. I still love it.
It's a labor of love.
And it, you know, it's one of those bikes that I built it with my dad, and so it's a complete labor of love, and it was something that we did together. And you know, my ex-husband told me he wanted first right of refusal when I sold it, and I'm like, told of you to assume I will ever sell this bike. So you can have it. You can have first right of refusal. It's never going to happen. It's kind of funny, but that bike is. I call it it was actually written up in The Horse, and the old magazine that I worked for, because it was a complete shit show bike where it's got parts from so many different eras to make it what it is, but I called it the Bastard, and I was told I couldn't put that in print, so I called it the Love Child. So it's really funny, because it's a 74 with a dry clutch. So people that know go, that should be a wet clutch bike. Well, it's not. So let's have this conversation a little bit later, okay? Because if I can't explain this to you right now, and they just look at me and they're like, well, you don't know your bike. I said, no, I do. But it's not, nothing stock. It's a mishmash, and it all works. But anyway, I digress.
It's my custom, and if you don't want to believe me, that's fine, but I know my motorcycle.
Right, it's the parts that came in the boxes of stuff that I put together, and, you know, we made it work, and I'm happy with it, so shove off. it's a beautiful bike, though. It's got short apes. It's got 11-inch ape hangers, and I sit in it just right for my little frame, and my you know, my arms are just below my shoulder length. It's really comfortable. It's like I'm just kind of hanging out. And, you know, my absolute favorite part about riding is, you know, in my life, my brain is constantly engaged. It's engaged in, you know, every, deadline and story and where am I taking the kids to next and whatever else is going on in there. But I get on that bike, and because it is what it is, and it does have so many little mechanical nuances with it and whatever, I'm constantly listening and, you know, writing and just focusing on that, that it's like a huge mental break for me where I just get to focus on one thing and ride. Does that make sense?
It brings you into the moment with no concerns of the future or past.
Exactly, because I have to focus on, well, I mean, like what I'm doing and then what, you know, whatever might be happening around me if I'm in traffic or whatever. And there is no, there's no space for anything else, for any drama or whatever. So it's like nature's Xanax, right? You just get on the bike and you go. And, you know, for me, there's really nothing better in this world to take all the anxiety and stress out than getting on that bike for me. Like, I love getting on that bike. It just feels like your most comfortable pair of jeans. It just feels right. And so I really love my motorcycle. But other people aren't going to like my motorcycle. It's temperamental, and, you know, it's a right-hand shift, and a lot of people can't wrap their head around that. And that's fine, and I don't really care because it's not your bike. It's mine. So I like it a lot.
My soul bike is a 1991 Suzuki DR350 that I now have 57,000 miles on. And we regularly have arguments, and I do have to wrench on him quite a bit. It's a 350 air-cooled kickstart, carbureted, single-cylinder motorcycle that I tour on with a bunch of, you know, crap I strap to the back.
That's crazy.
It's not designed for what I do to it, but I bought two parts bikes for it. I absolutely adore that bike. And people are like, why don't you get a modern bike if you're not breaking down so much? And I'm like, what's the fun in that? This is the bike I love.
Yeah, it's like, again, like your favorite pair of jeans. It just fits right. If it works, it works, right?
I know what you mean with that whole you're fully immersed in the moment, because I'm always listening to him. Like, is he running right? Do I hear a tick? Do I feel like the valves are getting off? Am I, you know, feeling the way the wheels roll? Are the bearings about to go out? Is the carburetor tuned? You know,
is that slap in the primary appropriate or not appropriate? And is it about to explode or is it good? Okay, it's good. Okay, I know that noise. I'm good.
Ow, it won't start again. Why won't it start? Oh, it's the same problem I have every once in a while. Let me just tweak it a little bit, and there we go.
Yeah, I had an old Bendix carb on it. I have a Mizuni now, but I had a Bendix carb on it originally, and I just had to smack that thing with a screwdriver, and it would start.
That's fine. It's just normal.
You get used to it, right? Like,
well, everyone else is staring at you like you're crazy, and you're like, what? We have arguments every morning. He's a carbureted bike. He doesn't like to start when he's cold.
Well, I had this crazy, bizarre-ass alignment situation with the starter on that bike, because it's electric and kick. And I had this situation, if I pushed the starter button, but then I grabbed the kicker and I pushed it down with my hand, it would line up the starter button, you know, it would line up the electronic start where it needed to, and it would start the bike. And I had people tell me that was really dangerous, that I could break my arm and all this other stuff. It never did anything like that. It was fine. But it would start up that way. And I had this guy come over to me, and he, like, got down on his knees and was doing one of those, like, you know, like, I'm not worthy, like, bowing to you kind of thing, like worshiping me. And I'm like, what the hell is that? And he's like, I have never in my life ever seen anybody hand kick a sportster. I looked at him like, what are you talking about? He goes, I watched you just reach over there and take your hand and push that kicker down and start that bike. And I'm like, that's totally not what just happened, but that sounds really cool. It took every bit of my weight to kick that bike over. There's no way I could have ever hand kicked that sportster. Like, Jesus. And then if you don't do a full weight kick at it, they'll throw your ass right over the handlebars. So ask me how I know. That thing, there's a lot of compression in that engine. But whatever. that's an old problem. It hasn't done that to me in a long time.
So I think, you know, as another industry professional, when you turn motorcycles into a job, it's like you don't have time to ride anymore.
That is true.
Everyone I talk to. So my
career is First I'm a Vagabond. If everything else fails, I will still be on the road because that's what I love doing. So I'm lucky that mine is writing. But everyone else I know who has gotten into some kind of part of, you know, whether they be a mechanic or, you know, magazines like you or anything else, it's like they don't ride anymore. They're busy working on motorcycles and motorcycle stuff, but never getting to actually use them for themselves anymore.
Well, you know, and the trick and the tragedy with that is that in what I do, anywhere that I go, I have to take stuff. Usually it's a full-on display. So I have a 59 Chevy that has a trunk that can fit 12 bodies in it, and that's, you know, really where I put all of my stuff so that all of my stuff can get to where I'm going. And when I go to a show where I have to take the motorcycle, I have to employ somebody who will either drive my car or a truck to bring the stuff behind me because it's almost impossible to do what I do on a bike. And oftentimes, Trish will ride her bike and I'll bring the car only because we want to have the representation of the bike there, but I still need a way to get the stuff there. And then I thought about, like, towing a trailer with a bike, and I'm like, that's just stupid. I'm not doing that either. So, no, that is legit. It does become a problem. And that's actually, I have, like, this list of things I'm going to do for, you know, self-improvement. One of the things is that I'm going to be intentional about my motorcycle riding as if it was a relationship and we are going to have date night.
That's a really good goal, though. That's how you make sure you make time for things that are important in your life and not just get swept up into the deadlines and things to do and immediate putting out fires and all that stuff.
That is absolutely, like, my plan is to, I need to be intentional about many things in my life, but why should it only be about, like, date night with my husband or with my kids? Just, like, you know, the whole, like, mental health thing, right? Like, if the happiest place that you are and the place that you feel no stress or anxiety is on your motorcycle, why isn't that a high priority?
Right.
Right? I mean, to me, and it's like, and I'm really bad at this because I'm, like, I'm really good at putting everything and everybody else in front of me and my wishes, my wants, my dreams, whatever. And then I sit back and I'm like, holy shit, I'm 40 years old. I turned 40 this year. And my first 40 years, I swear to God, has been for everybody else. And at some point, you know, I can't like just say, okay, everyone else, you know, pissed off. I'm going to focus on me now. But at the same time, you know, I think it takes a little bit of wisdom and realization that we have to carve out things that make us happy. And prioritize them. Otherwise, they will never happen. And then what regrets do you have? You don't have regrets for, you know, you don't ever regret, like, you know, doing whatever it is that you do for yourself. You don't regret going on that motorcycle ride. You don't regret loving somebody or, you know, going out with your best friend on the road trip of a lifetime, right? But you regret not doing those things. And I don't want to be like, oh, I should have, I wish I could have gone and done that thing. Like, I'd like to go to Sturgis. Not, I don't really give a shit about the party, but I want to do that ride, probably off season, so that I'm not with all those people, because I don't do well with a lot of people all at one time. That stresses me out. But
I love the Black Hills, and I highly recommend them not during Sturgis, like you said.
Yeah, and I've done them in a car. My husband and I did them in a Corvette on our way back across the country where we picked up the car, and it's beautiful. But it's different on a bike, and I know that. And I want to do the Dragon Tail. Like, I really want to do some of these rides where it's like, you know, you're all in, and you've got to, you know, it's you know, you and the road, and then you don't have the regret, like, oh, I wish I could have done that before I got, you know, X, Y, or Z reasons bullshit that you don't do something, right?
Hey, if you ever want to call them about a woman riding some of the famous roads, I'll send you a couple articles on it. I've done most of the named roads in the U.S. that everyone knows about.
If you've done articles about it, I would love to read them, both for personal and, you know, if you'd be willing to let me double hit that and promote them again. I think that the more people that we could get to dream about these types of things, you know, the better, right?
No, I agree.
Like,
and I'd love
awesome.
to do a I'd love to do a Bunker Biker spread with you. Unfortunately, Bunker Bikers made it to two publications, one online and one printed, I guess. And
why is that unfortunate?
Because the first, neither one of them I knew about until they already came out. The second one was false. They used a lot of bad information that wasn't true, and it looked more like it was to promote the YouTuber who made a video about Bunker Biker, not about promoting Bunker Biker itself. And then the first one was in a magazine that I would have never wanted to put Bunker Biker in because the people who read that magazine are not the kind of people I want in the community.
Oh, that's rough.
Yeah, and I'd have no option to do anything about this. I didn't know they were happening. I didn't consent to it. So I'd really love to do an actual spread that is, here's the real information about it. Here's what it's really about. And it's about Bunker Biker. Yes, I run it. It is my, it's my child. I've raised it. I have tailored it to be the what it is today, but it's still about community, not about a person who uses it.
I am 100% game. We'll talk some more on that. But you know, I told you about how we try to make this very diverse, and we do not have nearly enough motorcycle stuff in this. And I would absolutely love to talk to you more. And I actually would love to talk to you more about writing, you know, stories about, you know, roads to ride, trips to take, those sorts of things too. I think that would be outstanding.
Yeah,
and then I can create my own little checklist of things to do.
Oh, I can make that list blow up. You'll never finish them all. I've been living for 6 years on the road, and I've done 130,000 in like 17 countries, I think. Most of it in the U.S. because, well, the last 2 years has been COVID. I just came back from Eastern Europe in late 19 before COVID happened. Really glad I didn't get stuck there. But
yeah, no doubt.
I've been doing a lot in the U.S. I've done all 48 states on, I've been on three different bikes here in the U.S. and even I'm not done seeing all the things I want to see here. I still have a list.
A friend of mine from back in the horse days did a ride where he went through, I don't remember where he started, but I want to say started on the east coast of the U.S. and went through Canada up to Anchorage. And he chronicled that ride, and that ride sounded really cool, but it's very, very desolate. And I was like, you have to really time it so you don't hit it in winter because you do not want to hit that in winter. But that was really interesting. So, you know, it's really cool, you know, when you do something and you can kind of chronicle it so that you can, you know, I guess pave the way for somebody else to do a similar ride and have a similar experience, right?
I agree. That's why I actually post on Facebook and I have the website. I've actually, when I went over and did Romania, I was invited by someone and given a bike, one of hers. And I chronicled how much I spent and the issues I had along the way. I didn't really have a lot of them. It was really easy riding over in the EU and even going into Serbia. You know, I talked about the people I met along the way. And I mean, this is what I do. This is the inspiration I can provide people is by just documenting what I do and answering questions. And funny enough, my partner and I are going up to Alaska next year. He's been up 3 times. He was raised there and before he joined the army. And he makes jokes about how it's downright civilized now. They've really built it up. It's not nearly the adventure it used to be. But we're going to be going this summer anyways. And I'll be going my 350, and he's got a Harley Road, a 2019 Harley Road Glide with 156,000 miles on it.
Are you shipping the bike there or are you driving there?
Oh, we're riding there.
That's awesome.
Yeah, we don't ship our bikes, really. I mean, I guess it's potential that we could one day ship them over to Europe or Africa, but I'm kind of more of the fly in and buy a bike locally if I have the ability to register it like I need to.
Gotcha. I won't lie, I'm flipping through your Facebook profile right now. I'm looking at some of your adventures because, like, I did follow you enough to hear about your passport story, and that was awesome. It's, like, so nice to hear about good people in the world that, you know, like, gave you back your money and everything. Like, that's awesome. You know, it's like you're talking about these trips. I'm like, oh, I bet you have some of these pictures on your Facebook. And you do. Go figure.
I do. Photography and writing is my thing. I don't like doing YouTuber videos. It's just, but to me, that's a job. I don't have a passion for it. So it would just be a monotonous job of editing. I hear it could be up to an hour per minute of a video.
No, thanks. So the passport thing, since we're on the podcast, not everyone follows me on Facebook. I ordered a passport journal on Amazon, just a little leather book that's supposed to fit your passport. So I'd gotten it. I looked at it, put the passport in it. It was a little small, didn't really fit well. So I returned the passport book journal back to Amazon. And I made a stupid mistake by leaving my passport in there when I mailed it back. So my partner and I were up in New York. We'd gone to Phantom of the Opera in his car because, well, it's we did it in October, late October, and didn't want to take the bikes just because of that. And it's kind of hard to take a suit and dress on motorcycles without getting all wrinkled and messed up. So we're up there, and this lady sends me an email. She's like, I think I have your passport. My husband bought a passport journal on Amazon, and it looks like it's yours. And she Googled me, and she found me, and I have well documentation with my name, you know, same name, same birth date. And I had $300, a Romanian lei, a picture of an old gray scale picture that someone had left on my bike a few years ago. No idea who it is. It just says dad on the back. And then my COVID vaccine thingy. And so she actually just took $10 out to ship it back to me, and I'll have to go over and buy her a coffee. But I'm so glad she sent it back, because that would have been such a loss if I never did get it back.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, and it was like, there's another, like, hey, look, there's good people out there.
Yeah, I like highlighting the good people. The 350 has brought me more adventure than I can handle some days, and I've gotten to meet so many cool mechanics and people who rescued me when I broke down because I was in a place that, you know, I needed help and someone could provide it. And the friendships and the relationships I made along the way because of that, just invaluable. I think priceless is the word I really want there.
I'm like a sucker for, like, my favorite holiday is Christmas. And it's not so much because of, like, I actually am not a good gift receiver at all. Like, I like it, like, if you were, like my sister, and you saw something that spoke to you about me and you got it for me, that's great. But I hate it when people, like, go shopping because they have to, because it's Christmas and they have to give me another thing that I don't need, right? And it's, like, a thing that doesn't make sense anyway. You just bought me something because you thought you had to. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
So I love it, though, when, the feel-good stuff happens. So, like when a guy goes to, say, Walmart and pays off people's layaways just randomly, or, you know, Secret Santa type stuff, like where they're just blessing people, you know, whatever. I love all of the feel-good stuff. I'm sure that's right. Christmas is, like, my favorite holiday because that's where it really comes out loud, because people, like, kind of get this quote-unquote Christmas spirit, and they do all the good stuff then. I wish that it was, like, all year round, but it's not. So I just, you know, I embrace the Christmas stuff, but I love the feel-good stories about people and humanity, and, you know, when, you know, really when anything good happens, because, you know, especially if somebody, like, didn't do anything for it, right? If someone's, like, sick and, you know, somebody just decides to bless their day by, you know, putting up an art Christmas tree installation in their front yard with, you know, their favorite Christmas ornaments on it. Like, that kind of stuff. I love that kind of stuff. And I'm sure that's one of the reasons why I absolutely love the, like, the feel-good stories that come from Funk a Biker, which honestly is why I started following it. Like, you know, I really dig the community that, you know, we find ourselves in.
Oh, I agree. Of course, I don't find myself in a community. I made the community. I wasn't happy with everything else I saw online, and I'm like, I think I could do it better. So I did. So I get to enjoy the fruits of my labor by having this community and having so many great people in there with me. Like, I brought good people around me to be able to do this thing, and it's so fulfilling, enriching, soul-warming, you know, any of those words.
Yes, all of those words, right? Like, you know, it's all about just that good, positive emotion that can come from, you know, really helping others, helping each other. Yeah, I was at a event, and they were saying, I am my brother's keeper, and I am my sister's keeper. And I was really confused by that. And, you know, it was explained to me, that, you know, that basically, like, they have each other's back, and, you know, and it was just a really beautiful sentiment, where it's like, if you fall down, I will pick you up, and we'll, you know, continue on together. And I just, I'm a sucker for all that kind of stuff.
So, back to the magazine. Where do you see your magazine going over the next, you know, 5 years? Do you have any big plans?
Dreams and aspirations, yes. Plans are something that I'm actually working on to make those dreams a reality. So the magazine in and of itself is, you know, I would like it to be a bigger platform than it is to try to help more, more people. Ironically, half of my subscriber base has always been men. Those are the supporters that I was alluding to earlier. But I would like more women to realize that they have a voice in the industry and that they have value and they can play too. It's, you know, ask the questions, get dirty, et cetera. So I would like that aspect of it to grow. But in addition to the magazine, Trish and I do, car and cycle care classes where we teach basic automotive type knowledge. So fluid checks, air pressure, you know, she typically runs the cycle care classes and I typically run the automotive classes. And, but they're both basically the same thing where, you know, what are your preventative maintenance schedules, that sort of thing. And, I would like to really get many more women through those so that they feel more confident when, you know, something's going wrong, that they hear it, they feel it. They know how to communicate that problem to either fix it themselves or be able to accurately convey that information to the mechanic of their choice without feeling like they're stupid. You
know, that's amazing. And I hope more women get into that because I can't tell you how many times I hear the story of a woman going in and getting essentially shafted because she doesn't understand the mechanics and what's going on. You know, she gets overcharged for work or paid too much for the bike because she didn't know, you know, all the fancy words they were using to sell this thing or to tell her how broken it was were essentially not, you know, fluff. They were lies.
Exactly. Like, okay, you might need a new battery, but you probably don't need a new battery and like, you know, whatever your charging system is, you know, whatever that situation is, it's like if you understand it and you can say, yes, my bike is charging, but my battery is not holding the charge or it's not charging at all, but, you know, like, just basically to understand what's going on, you know, my number one frustration was this lady I knew named Wendy. She was a dear, dear woman, but she knew nothing about her car. It was just her daily driving car. And she took it in to get, she went in to get a tune-up, and they charged her $800 to change the spark plug. Because I told her they're super special, custom, blah, blah, blah. Like, I'm sorry. Oh, and they threw in an air cleaner. And I thought she drove like, it was like a Ford Taurus or something. There's absolutely nothing special or fancy about this. And they talked her into this and she agreed to it because at the time it was a new car and they were top of the line plugs and they were going to give her better fuel economy and blah, 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 blah. And she got screwed out of hundreds of dollars over it. And I was like, honey, we could have done that in the, you know, the work parking lot. There's no reason for all of that. So we've got a pretty significant passion about education and empowerment through the magazine. And I would say that our end goal isn't so much about, you know, making the magazine better, but making the conversation bigger. If that makes sense.
The community and the resources, making sure that they're accessible. Maybe.
Right, making sure that the women are open to the whole communication highway to begin with, because if they don't understand how to talk this talk, then they can't really ask the questions that they need to ask. And so, you know, if they understand the terminology, like, you know, my brakes are grumbling or they are grinding, those are two different noises, right? Or squeaking, or there's a clunk coming out of my front end. You know, you don't want to tell me that it sounds like there's squirrels in it. What does that mean? and that's what I've heard. Or, you know, I love the girl. She asked me, and it's a safe place for them to ask questions, so we didn't make fun of them at all. But, you know, this lady asked me what the difference between radiator fluid coolant and antifreeze was. And I said, there's no difference. It's just what people call it, depending on where you're at and who you're talking to. Well, you know, how can coolant do the same thing as antifreeze? Well, it's properties of both, you know, and so you explain these things. And I'm glad they asked the question, but, I mean, in theory, they could have gotten charged for three different fluids.
Yeah, if someone's out there to scan people, they would have been, you know, the easiest target.
Exactly. And a couple of questions, and you can tell that they're the easiest target. And I think that's really, at the end of the day, what we're all about is trying to just empower women to, you know, to not be afraid to ask the questions, to learn as much as they can about probably the second biggest investment. Because whether it's a car or a motorcycle or both, nothing's cheap, right? I mean, even my bike, I mean, I paid $4,000 for it, but, you know, the amount of time and energy and effort that I have into that bike, I mean, I should know it. Like, you know, you shouldn't not have a clue about what it is that you're driving. You need to know about it for safety as well as, you know, not getting screwed over.
So I subscribe to the heathen philosophy, and one of the heathen philosophies, the nine noble virtues, is self-reliance. And I believe to my core that anything you use in life, you should make an attempt to learn how to fix, so you don't have to replace it or rely on other people to do it. And I'm not saying that you need to know how everything in your house works, but, you know, one thing at a time, you know, learn how to change your plugs out, learn how to use your breaker box, you know, replace the insides of a toilet, you know, the toilet bowl.
Absolutely.
You know what I mean? And I mean,
yeah,
those
you're
are the
speaking
same
to a girl
skills.
Who rebuilt her house, so I get that all the way.
So those skills, I think, are important all the way around. And unfortunately, a lot of women weren't raised in a family or community that was supportive in them learning. And so they have a lot of built-in negativity and, you know, self-doubting thoughts that, you know, they can't do it because they're a woman. That's what they've been told their whole life. And, you know, I do my best to fight against that as well. No, anyone can learn this. It's just your willingness to actually apply yourself and someone having the patience to help show you when you don't have a foundation to work on yet. Because once you get those base skills down, once you know how to use a hammer and a screwdriver and a wrench, those same skills apply everywhere that you're going to use those same tools.
Well, and the beauty, you know, the beauty of living in where we live is, so your toilet innards, you brought that up. Your toilet's not flushing right. Your handle just goes down and nothing happens. Okay, let's open that lid up. You look in and you go, okay, I have no idea what I'm looking at. So you Google it. A YouTube video is going to pull up. You can watch a YouTube video and learn all about the inside of your toilet tank in about 5 minutes, and you can look back and go, oh, the chain broke. Okay, so I can hook this chain up, and then when I push the lever down and this other lever comes up, and it's going to pull the chain up, and it's going to pull the flap up, and hey, I get it. You know, and to have that technology, even if you know none of the terminology, you open up YouTube or, you know, a Google how-to or, you know, how things work or whatever it is that you find online. And I have yet to find a problem that I have not found an answer to online.
I've
yeah,
had
I'm
a
not
few
liking
things.
Answer I find online, but
I thought a few things that the bike was rare enough. I couldn't find a video on the specific thing, and I just kind of had to work from there. But for the most part, yeah, you can become a YouTube mechanic any day of the week. And there are plenty of people who are breaking it down to the very base fundamental understanding that you don't need to know anything to come into this video and learn how to do this.
Exactly. And like, I have a 1952 General Electric refrigerator, and there are no videos about how the specific components in that work. However, there's a ton of videos about how other refrigerators look, and you can apply the knowledge from, you know, A to B and go, oh, I bet it's my thermostat or, you know, something like that. And, you know, once you learn one thing, you learn how to, you know, how the inside of your toilet works. So that starts to get you on the range of, okay, so how does the plumbing in my sink work? Oh, it's kind of similar. Okay, there's a trip and waste valve. Okay, I understand how that works. And then you can, you know, continue on, right? And you build off of it. And I think it's so hard for women to just take that, well, I guess anybody really, just take that first step of look it up, right? I mean, most stuff, at least the basics of it, are going to be online, right?
Oh, yeah.
So,
and I mean, you're going to save
that's
yourself.
That's one thing I love.
You're going to save yourself a ton of money. I know companies kind of make up their profit when they have people who are calling them out for, like, toilet innards. But that's like a $200 call.
Absolutely. And it's really
like 30 bucks
apart. And it's one of those things where it's like, how cool is it to go, I did that. I fixed it. Woohoo! I love that self-satisfaction of, you know, whatever it is, having it broken and, you know, other people just throw it away because the world is so disposable. And then, you know, have like, you have that thing and you fixed it. You can stand back and go, wow, that was satisfying as hell. I just fixed that lamp. It turns on again, you know, and it wasn't, you know, it's like a bad switch or, you know, whatever that situation is. And it's like super, for me, self-gratifying. And I don't think there's much more that makes me happy than to like have that, I'm going to say, instant mode of having fixed that problem. Like I did the first time I blew the engine on my bike, I remember I couldn't fix it on my own. I had to ask my dad for help. But I had this moment where I drained my oil and I saw the metal in it and I was really upset, but I said, hey, on the plus side, I know what color I'm going to paint my bike. And my husband was like, I don't like the sound of that. I'm going to go metallic black. It's going to look awesome. But, you know, after working with my dad and getting that bike running again, when I heard that thing fire up, the immense, you know, how it felt to fix it. Like, I love fixing stuff. That's just kind of how I'm wired, though.
Same. I my 350, I've taken the engine out. I can go in there and take it out in the next, like, hour. And I love being able to say that every bolt on that bike I've touched. So if anything goes wrong, I know it was my fault, which is that double-edged sword. Maybe when I touched it last, I did it wrong, and it's my fault that I'm having to fix it now. But then I get to fix it, and that high is just, it's amazing to be able to say, this is my machine. I know everything about it, you know, or a lot about it at least. And when it breaks, I fix it. And I know it will again, and I will do it again. And I'm not paying someone $100 to change my oil, because it's like 40 bucks in oil. And like, dude, it's like one bolt and a screw on oil filter for most bikes.
Yeah, I didn't tighten the caliper bolt up on my brake system, and when that front brake locked up and it shifted, I was like, God damn it, I know that noise and I know what I did wrong. And, you know, it was funny because it's exactly that double-edged sword where it's like, but I know exactly what's wrong because I remember, oh shit, I forgot to torque that. But I knew that I had screwed that up and fixed it quite quickly.
There's
and nobody
been a,
was harmed in the process.
there's been a couple times I've ridden off and I forgot to tighten my rear axle after I adjusted my chain. Yeah. Why is my bike acting weird? Oh, man, come on. Again? You'd think I'd learn at this point.
That's funny. Nah, some of us are, you know, tough to teach.
Learn it the hard way and then learn it the hard way again?
Eventually it sinks in, though, right? Like,
well, you know, I tighten my chain somewhat weekly sometimes when I'm burning through chains. So I'm doing this job all the time, and just every once in a while I forget to tighten it up.
Yeah, shit happens. But again, you hear that rattle and you go, ah. Oh. Nothing like chain slap remind you that you forgot to do that.
My carb on my 350 is it's a BST. Oh, I forgot the number now. BST 44. It's a pumper carb.
Okay.
No, it's not a pumper carb. It's a CV carb. There we go. It's a CV carb, and it has a hole on it that you have to make sure you cover with a nipple. You know, like a little rubber nipple. And
okay.
So every once in a while, that little rubber nipple, since it's in the engine, like right next to the engine, the head, it gets hot and it dry rots off. And when that nipple comes off, it's got a vacuum leak, a very massive vacuum leak in the carb. And then I'm like, why is my bike not starting? And I start freaking out. I've been kicking it for 10 minutes. My hip hurts. And my partner's always like, is a nipple on it? Well, yeah, the nipple's on it. And then I'm like, wait a second. Let me go look real quick just to make sure the nipple's actually still on it. And it's not. And I'm like, damn it.
One of these days I'll learn that when it doesn't start, I need to go check that nipple.
And now I have a more permanent solution. It's not just going to dry rot off anymore. But, man, that got me, like, 5 times. And every time my partner just staring at me like, can we go ride now? Yeah. Yeah,
that's
I guess
funny.
We can go ride now.
So is there anything else you'd like to share about the magazine? Since that kind of was what the episode's about, but I've really enjoyed the chat otherwise as well.
I mean, other than the fact that we come out, usually come out 6 times a year, we're a little behind this year. We come out 6 times a year. We are self-distributed, so it's subscription-based only. You can subscribe on bottlegals.com. Other than that, I don't really think there's a whole lot I need to share.
Are you print or online publication?
We are print.
You think you're ever going to go online? I hear a lot of the print ones have stopped printing and just gone to e-magazines.
How many e-magazines do you read, honestly?
None.
Me either. So, no, I don't plan on ever going to e-magazine.
It's nice getting to hold something in hand.
Yeah, so we actually did a survey of our readership and our Facebook followers. We did it 3 or 4 times, in a couple of different years we did it, because we had our business people were like, oh, print's dead, you need to go virtual. And, you know, I would say, I can say definitively that our readership does not want digital. I think we had 1% state that they would read both. Nobody wanted digital only. And I was like, yeah, that's telling. Because none of us, I mean, we were already inundated with all the digital crap. The last thing we want to do is, you know, lay on the couch or whatever and, you know, read something else on our phone. So, nope, we will stay print.
Very nice. Does it cost money to sign up?
It's $28 for 6 issues. So,
very affordable.
You know, yeah, I mean, we try to keep, basically that's our cost, you know, nobody's getting rich on print, but at the same time, it's, you know, the message that we're trying to get out there is really about what we're trying to do. So, so it's a $28 subscription, or $50 for 12. And so you save a little bit more money on a 2-year. And it gets mailed directly to your place, so you don't even have to go looking for it.
You know, that's something that I have to try to not talk about very often, and I probably should. Unfortunately, how do I want to say this sentence? A lot of people are in this industry to make money, and they really couldn't care about the love of what they're doing. It's all about the profitability. And there are a lot of the famous writers, YouTubers, a lot of the publications, the everything that are just here because it's something that they can get famous with. And then there are people like you who are doing it as a labor of love. Like, sure, you need to make enough money to keep the doors open, but you're not here to get rich. You're here to spread a message that you believe in. You do it for the reasons, you know, you do it for your heart and soul, not just to line your pocketbook. And I've always found there to be a difference in quality between the people who are here to use it to get famous and to get it rich, and those who are here because they believe in it.
Yeah, I mean, it's a double-edged sword, right? Because I've been told by all of my business mentors at one point or another that I'm a terrible businesswoman because, you know, I don't do things specifically to make money at all. And, you know, I need to charge more. I need to do this or I need to do that. And I'm like, yeah, it doesn't feel right. So, like, you know, obviously, you know, we need, you know, advertising and stuff to make this sustainable. But the last person that I want to make pay for it is my end user person, because it needs to remain affordable for them. And if you guys aren't buying it, then our message isn't getting out. And if our message doesn't get out, there's zero point in us doing any of it.
Oh, yeah. I get told the same thing, that I'm a horrible business person because I won't monetize Bunkabiker. You know, I could be charging everyone at least $5 a year to even be a part of the community. And I'm like, that's not what community, we're not a service. We are a community, which means I rely on people who donate and contribute by choice, not because I'm forcing you to pay a fee.
Right. Right. And I mean, other people would have already paid a fee, and then somebody like you would do it anyway. And you're basically shooting yourself in the foot. Your message isn't getting out. You're making a little bit of money, but then you become a has-been anyway because your heart wasn't in it for the right reason.
Yeah, I mean, I was a super poor traveler the first few years on the road. I'm doing a little better these days, but even still, I'm not rich in any way. And if I wouldn't pay for it myself, why would I run something that I expect other people to pay for? it should be free to start with, and it should be something that is your choice to contribute to if you can.
Right. And, you know, and that's, and I think that really separates out the people that I really like to put into my, like, I have an inner circle of people in this industry. And I don't think anybody that's in my inner circle is all about themselves and self-promotion. You know, we're all actually really bad business people because of that too. But, you know, again, it's much more about, you know, the passion and, you know, really the way that I look at, you know, as I look at all of this, you know, I've got marketing stuff. You know, there's going to be stuff that we're going to be selling. The holidays are coming up and we're absolutely going to be selling merchandise, right? But that's not the, that's not necessarily why we're doing it. It's still all about promoting that message. So, like, when we sell a shirt that says Girls Can Too, you better believe that we're not selling that for, you know, like, I paid $40 a shirt for a T-shirt at SEMA. What kind of bullshit is that? Like,
and we all know how much profit there is there.
Well, yeah. Well, yeah. My other thing is I own a screen printing shop, so I know exactly how much profit is in there. I know what the blanks cost. I know what the ink costs. And I even know what the overhead is. And I'm like, I feel bad charging $20 a shirt at shows, but at the same time, I'm paying for the show booth and all that other stuff. But at the end of the day, it's all about trying to get that message out. Because if you're wearing a shirt that says Girls Can Too, other people are seeing that. Right? So we're, oh, it's just
do
a
do you make synthetic?
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Do you make synthetic shirts?
When you say synthetic, you mean like polyester?
Yeah.
I sublimate on polyester, and then I screen print on cotton blend, typically.
We'll have to talk more about this, but if you end up, if I can get a shirt from you sometime, I'll wear it and promote you.
Awesome. We'll be talking on the sideline anyway, because we got some other things to talk about. I've been taking notes. I'm really excited about the concepts of, I actually wrote down a thing. I called it, writing roots. Yeah. So we might have a column for you.
Ooh. That'd be awesome.
Yeah. I'm really excited.
Oh, I am too. I'm so glad that it was Dana, right?
She's a sweetheart.
I'm so glad that she recommended you and that we are now chatting because of her. I'll definitely have to send her a thank you.
Yeah. And we'll have to, like, thank her for the connection because I think I have a new friend. I like friends.
I like friends, too. Well, it's been really great chatting with you, Donnie. Is there anything else you'd like to say before we end the show?
No, but on the topics of I like friends, you know, guys, find me on Facebook, Throttle Gals, and, you know, hit like and we'll be chatty. I like people.
Oh, yeah.
Mean people.
And subscribe to the magazine, too.
Yes, please. Subscribe to the magazine. That's a shitty business person of me.
Yeah, you're not promoting yourself.
I completely forgot about that. Yeah, subscribe. Like, you know, comment on the bottom of the video. You know, all that stuff.
Yes. Well, I hope you have a great
day.
I'll let you know when the show comes out.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Thanks so much.